Welcome. Good morning. Hopefully, not too many of you have a hangover this morning. I know I didn't because I flew in at 1:30 in the morning. Okay, enough of that. So, welcome to creating findable rich media content. This is a panel where we're going to be discussing not just searchability on the web, but actually findability, how to find content on the web. And I'm pretty honored to have like three guests with us today here that are going to help us with this topic and talk to us a little bit about sort of some of the challenges they've encountered.
I thought my job was going to be really easy there for a minute. It's like the Microsoft PowerPoint auto content wizard. Okay. So let's get the show on the road. So the audio after, you know, some running around sounds like it's pretty good. Everybody can hear me, right? Cool. So I'm John Boutel. From SlideShare, which was the page we were just looking at earlier, and I'll talk about what that is. And I'm going to be talking about what we learned over the last year while we were building SlideShare.net, which is a site that uses a lot of Ajax, it uses a lot of Flash, and it uses them in different ways. And hopefully I'll be able to share some funny customer support emails if I can figure even a tertiary excuse for squeezing them in. How many people here would consider themselves web developers? Just to get a sense of the room. Okay, it's like almost everybody. How many people here would consider themselves designers? Okay, and how many people would really consider themselves JavaScript developers, specifically JavaScript developers? Okay, and Flash developers? Okay, wow. That's pretty unusual, actually, like an even balance between the two. That's really cool. So I'm the only one up here, obviously, but these four guys, Couple, Lullet, Golik, and Gaurav, they're my front-end team, and they're awesome, and they contributed a lot to the ideas that came in here. They learned a lot of this stuff along with me, and they worked on this presentation as well, so they're here in spirit. So I'm a software guy turned startup guy. SlideShare was my idea. I'm one of the co-founders, and my job title is head geek. My blog is kind of an abandoned property at the moment, so I don't necessarily recommend visiting it. Although I'm the number one result for the query debug JavaScript IE, and that's where I get about half my traffic. There's a funny little technique that involves Office 2003 that I documented that people like to look up. But more importantly, slideshare.net/jboutel. Jboutel is my username, so every user on SlideShare has a space at their username, and that's where all their stuff is. So this presentation afterwards will be visible there, and you'll be able to just look at it. You can look at all my other presentations. If this one isn't working for you, you can just, you know, check out stuff that I've said in the past, and maybe that'll work better. So SlideShare is a social site for sharing PowerPoint files and presentation files generally, recorded presentations, ultimately video and audio presentations as well. The idea is that if you have a message that you're trying to get out, if it's broad, if it's a presentation of some kind, then SlideShare is the best place to put it. And it's the best place not just because, you know, you can take it and then you can put it back into your blog or your other website, you know, with a widget that we provide, but also just because we give really good exposure. We have a lot of traffic. We have very good SEO. And so it's a good way to get your ideas out there. And just an example of this is if you look at the tag SXSW07, which was last year, you can see a bunch of the presentations were uploaded and are archived, which is really cool because a lot of the stuff that happens at conferences, it's kind of, it happens and it's gone. It's sort of transitory in nature. And so we provide a permanent home for these kinds of presentations. So if you were, you know, in another track or you couldn't make it in the morning because you drank too much the night before, you can still check out the South by Southwest presentations that you missed. And everybody has PowerPoint, even Darth Vader. This would not be a good presentation for SlideShare, I think, because it's targeted specifically at Luke. And we don't really do one-to-one. We're more about sort of broadcast. But if he had, you know, recruiting for, you know, the stormtroopers, talking about the benefits and the salary and the work environment, you know, that'd be a really good thing to put on SlideShare. So, right when we launched, we immediately had interest from, various financial operators and, investors. And, we're taking our time trying to decide, how we're going to play it. But there's a lot of interest. And we also have, some really happy, enthusiastic users. And these kinds of emails are really what keep you running when you're running a social website. Just feeling the love keeps you running when you don't have enough coffee. I'm not here to harsh on Ajax or Flash at all. I'm a very, strong believer in rich client technologies. I think that they're the way of the future. I think the web is so much better than it was last year and the year before and the year before. It's getting better every year. It's getting better really fast. It's getting easier to use really fast. But it's also getting harder to make really fast. If you think about websites 5 years ago, there was a nice clear division of labor between designers and between developers. There was a very clear paradigm for what the experience would be like. It was this sort of very navigational metaphor where you would click on things and you would go places. And now there's just a lot more that you can do. And we have a lot more rope that we can hang ourselves with. There's a lot more choices. There's a lot more collaboration that's needed between developers and designers. Developers need to be more designer-centric. Maybe designers need to be more technology-centric, right? So if comic books have taught us anything at all, they've taught us that with great power comes great responsibility. And so we need to be responsible and careful and work hard to make Flash Ajax applications better. And this is some of the mistakes that we've made I'm going to be sharing, and hopefully that'll stop other people from making the same ones. Wow, I can still hear that other presentation in the background, like really faint. So I think modal dialogues, these experiences, they're pop-up-like in nature, where you go and you do something, and then it's over and it closes. They're extremely seductive. They're extremely appealing. I remember I was a developer at a B2B company in 99 and 00, and not doing really customer-facing stuff where the usability was important. And I loved pop-ups. And all the developers I was with loved pop-ups too. Anytime your manager would let you get away with a pop-up, you would do it. So why? What was so great about pop-ups? Why were pop-ups appealing to us? I think that in a weird way, they were appealing for the same reason that Ajax is appealing, is because they get away from this navigational metaphor of clicking on links to go places. Clicking on links to go places is great when you're looking at content, when you're looking at hypertext. But when you're building an application, a lot of times it's hard to figure out when someone does something, where's the place that they're supposed to go after they do that? And then there's all these kind of bullshit pages that, someone would have to code up. They're like the, your order was complete, the task was finished kind of page. And the paths that would be followed, would always change. So a lot of times in an application, you say, okay, the user does this, and then after this, they go there. And you'd code it up, and then the manager would be like, no, actually, after they do this, they go somewhere else. And this would constantly be changing. It would be constantly changing because designing good process flow is actually really hard. It's a challenging design problem. It's hard to get right. You need to show it to the users and then figure out what the real answer is. But it's frustrating for developers. We do all kinds of things like the first generation of model view controller frameworks. We're all about abstracting this problem. So it would be in a property file somewhere that someone could edit without bothering the developer. That was how annoying it was. Pop-ups get you away from that problem. Ajax also gets you away from that problem. And you can go really, really far just saying, okay, here's the page. Do stuff on the page. When you want to go to another page, go to another page. What are you talking to me for, right? It's nice. It's simple. It goes pretty far. But then you hit a wall. And that wall is what concerns me. So just going back, I think that this is kind of like the dark side of the force, the modal dialogues. And they, if you go with the dark side of the force, you can get pretty far fast. You can be like a Jedi middleweight, in like a week. But it doesn't take you all the way. You have to run around the little green guy in your back to really get good. So here's some modal dialogue that I'm actually happy with on SlideShare. So this is if you're bookmarking something. You can see this Save to Favorites link. So you click on it, and a div just opens up right there. So it's nice because the user's eyes are right there where they clicked, and then now they're interacting right in that same area. And they can put in some tags. They don't have to, but we want them to. So we kind of make it look like it's necessary, even though it isn't. And then it clicks save, and it does a little yellow fade thing that I didn't manage to get a picture of. And then it's closed, and you can see the data. So technical word for this is a microlink plus a 1 second mutation. And if you want to talk like that, you should really buy this book. Seriously, it's a good book. It's easy to read. It's enjoyable to read. And it gives you a vocabulary to use to talk about Ajax design. So instead of, you know, saying long paragraphs about what we're talking about, we can just say these little quick buzzwords. So here is a much, much shittier modal dialogue that we did. And you can see why it sucks pretty much immediately. So this is for sending an email. And it's in a three-column layout. So the columns it's in is pretty narrow. And it opens up. There's the subject, email, send me a copy. But look at how small that box is, right? This isn't the affordance of like an email client or anything. This is like a, you know, like an SMS. You know, what are you going to, 20 characters in there or something? And as a result, the emails that people send, we've noticed, are really, really short. And it's because bad design on our part. Basically, this sort of Swiss Army knife metaphor where the panel kind of opens up, you work on it, then it closes down, and it's inside itself, it's pushing other stuff down. That locks you in to the layout of the page itself. And that's good if the place where you're in, you know, that thing will fit, and it's bad if that thing won't fit there. And this is a case where that thing won't fit. So let me just ask the room, like, what are the other options that we have for handling this problem? Anybody have any ideas? This sucks. A pop-up. Okay, but we're not allowed to do those anymore, and they don't work, right? Like, they get blocked by pop-up blockers. A layer that expands over the second middle column. Okay, just over the second column. Okay. Ding, 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 ding. So Lightbox is a pop-up. It's a pop-up 2.0. So three categories here. Lightboxes are terrible. Lightboxes are sometimes okay. Lightboxes are a great design pattern. So who thinks lightboxes are terrible? Nobody. Nobody? Nobody thinks lightboxes? Okay, two people. Who thinks lightboxes are sometimes okay? Yeah, I was kind of going to do that one too. It's like kind of the middle of the road. And who thinks lightboxes are a really great UI design pattern? Okay. So what are the problems with lightboxes? They're modal. Right. Why is that bad? Exactly. Right, you're basically, you're stuck here, right? All you can do is poke Andy. Until you either poke Andy or say that you're not interested in poking Andy, there's no other option for you. And you know, for stuff where you really, really want to make sure that the user finishes it, because otherwise the database is going to be in an inconsistent state, you really need to freeze the interface and just get them through the process. For other stuff, it's interruptive. You're unnecessarily constraining the user's options. And it's pop-ups, right? So they're kind of ghetto. I mean, it's not the end goal. It's not really where we're trying to get. Oh, there's another problem with these. If you try to do one of these on top of a Flash widget or a component of Flash that you would like to full screen later on, you can't, because there's an incompatibility. Like in, you need to set mode to transparent, I think, in order to make this to work. And then that means that you can't full screen. So I don't think it's a surprise that this was actually, I don't know if it was invented or just popularized on Facebook, where there was basically no Flash at all. So they didn't have this problem. But with the Flash 9 full screening, which is really hot, you know, that's kind of incompatible with this, at least on the same page. So you have to actually do real design at some point and design some process flows that can pull people in through accomplishing a task and hold their hands. This mental atrophy of just things opening and closing and that being all we do, it gets you right to a certain point and then it breaks. And who's good at this? I think that the slide and the Rock You guys, the photo widget sharing people, they're amazing at this. Just go to, you know, go to slide.com, like not right now, but like immediately after this talk, and just try not to make a photo slideshow. And they make it so, like, it's like once you go there, it's almost like they take over your brain. You're like, oh, well, all I have to do is just pick the directory. And now it's on the web. And they just don't put any barriers. They walk you right through it from stage to stage. And I think people do need to have their hands held. They need to be told explicitly what to do and where to go sometimes. I mean, look at this email that I got from one of my users. It says, he wants me to tell him what sites to spend time on in the internet. That's what he's looking for from me. So, yeah, here's a flow that we're happy with. And this has to do with if you're at a group, like for a conference, and you want to add a slideshow that's already in SlideShare to a group. It's kind of, you could get the URL of the slideshow and then paste it in, but then you're having to have a tab, and you know a lot of people don't know about tabs still. And it's an awkward thing that's outside the web application itself. So how do you solve that problem? It's a challenging problem. So we had this little slideshow finder that opens up below. You can see it expands. And then you can type in a search term, and it gives the search results. And then once you get the results, then you can look at the stuff that's only your slideshows that were with that term. Or you can look at the things that you've bookmarked. And then you pick it, boom, and it's there. So the user's hand is held throughout the whole entire process. There's no real way for them to fall off, and they don't hit a section where they're like, oh, now I have to open up another browser window and do something, or now I have to wait for 5 minutes. So some of the ideas that we get for features are when people ask us to do unreasonable things. Like this guy wants us to snoop through our database and see if we can find his friend, and then email his friend and email him and like help them. I don't know what it's really about, but... So we built a little flow that helps them do that. And this is the typical, spam everybody on your contact list kind of stuff. You put it in, it scoops it out of the database. It lists all the people that are on your contact list. You pick the ones that you like, then you invite them. It tells you if they're already on the system. Nowhere to fall off. Now let's look at something that sucks. So this is our upload experience. Now, upload is one of the really, really important processes in any kind of a social sharing application, because that's where the value comes into the system, right? Nobody's using SlideShare because of the nice Ajax and Flash widgets. They're using it because of the stuff that's in there, because they can find slideshows that are about the stuff they like. So this is value coming in. We don't want to screw it up. So we start out good. We say, hey, pick a file. We pick a file, and then we immediately start uploading it. We don't even wait for anything else to happen. We don't ask him anything else. We just say, okay, so you picked a file, so we're uploading it. And if you want to back out later, you can always back out later. But we're just starting the process right now. So that I like. Then it uploads, and we take him to this panel, and we say, hey, so put in some metadata, right? It's John's slideshow from 2008, South by Southwest, highly recommended. And then you hit publish. And this is where we convert it into a Flash thing that can be embedded over the web and that we can show. And this waits for a little too long, but it's okay. And then we take them here. And so it's like, I got it. Oh, and now we're like, okay, so you have to go to some other place to find out if the conversion has happened yet. And there's nothing that you can do on this screen at all. So, fuck you, basically. Like, this is terrible. And then, okay, then they click on the link, and they're like, okay, so work in progress. And there's still nothing you can do. And there's stuff that they could do here, right? I mean, it's not like, uploading is the end of the road. They should be sending this to their friends, right? They should be, maybe refining the metadata, writing a better description. But we just drop them off. We just take them halfway down the road, and then all of a sudden the road ends and they drive off the end. So that's bad process. So this is about Ajax and its interaction with the server-side code. And it's partially informed by the fact that we're a bootstrap startup, and we started out, we had like three Celeron servers, and then we got tech-crunched. And it's all written in Ruby, which is a great language. It's really expressive and powerful. We're hiring Ruby developers, by the way, so any Ruby developers in the room, come see me later. But it's a slow language, let's be honest. And it needs big hardware. So we had huge scaling problems. And we wanted to cache pages. And Ajax actually looked like a great solution for our problems, because we could do cool ideas like this, which I now call the Herky Jerky UI Anti-Pattern. This was a feature, not a bug, when we did it. We were like, oh, wow, we're so smart. So the front page is the same for everybody except for a few things. So why not cache the whole front page and then just retrieve the stuff that's separate for everybody later? And you can do that for only the users that are logged in and actually have personalized data. So that's nice. The users that that don't have an account on the system, they'll just see this front page. So you can see, nothing up my sleeve. The page loads, and then this pops in like a second later. And so our hope was, well, people won't notice that it's coming in a second later, and we'll just be like the magician who's like, slipping the dove, underneath the table, and then boom, there it is. Not actually true. People notice the change. They instantly notice the change. And even worse, sometimes, because this is, the first thing is just HTML getting fetched off the web server. And then this is Ruby code that's talking to the database. Sometimes there'll be a big differential between how fast one loads and how fast the other loads. So then they think they're not logged in. And then when we ship new code to the servers, we wipe out our sessions information, which is kept in memcached. So then they really aren't logged in. So sometimes it looks like they're logged in, but they're not. Sometimes it looks like they're not logged in, but they are. Sometimes it looks like they're not logged in, and they're not. So horrible usability problem. It gets worse. So this happens, and then the page waits for about a second, and they're like, oh, the thin ideal. That's kind of interesting. And look, it's right there, and I can, I'm just about to click on it and check it out. Whoa. What the fuck? So we got one of them newfangled Facebook newsfeed type thingies. More personalization makes the site sticky and lets people know what their friends are doing on the site. It's really cool. But it didn't come in with the page. It came in after the page. So this is a huge violation of the user's expectations. It's totally not cool. So what we basically did was we compromised the user experience in exchange for performance, which is, you could maybe say, hey, sometimes you gotta break some eggs to make an omelet. These are good problems to have. Maybe some compromises are called for. Unfortunately, Ajax might actually be the cause rather than the cure of performance problems. So there's this trade-off between performance and scalability, right? On the performance side, what you're measuring is one request going through the system. How fast does it take to respond to one request? And it's possible to argue that the caching of the whole page and then the fetching of the other data later is a performance improvement. But from a scalability perspective, we've basically tripled the number of HTTP requests going to our system. And we've doubled the number of requests that are actually going, through to the, to the app server and actually running code. So there's twice as many requests that involve running code and three times as many requests overall. So when you look at this, on a massive scale, when lots and lots of people are hitting the site at the same time, you actually start immediately not even getting the benefit that you thought you were getting. Instead, you're just shooting yourself in the foot and messing up your user experience. So basically, I've come to the conclusion that Ajax is not a very good solution for performance problems. Maybe if it's something that's on the bottom of the page and is like a graphic resource that doesn't involve running code, then the user won't notice it and it can get fetched later. But it just in general, I think you have to make your HTML generating efficient enough so that the whole page comes fast enough. And there's no getting around that. Okay. This is where it gets even worse. So we're really excited about the fact that you could comment on individual slides. We're like, it's micro content. And so right now this screenshot is looking at all comments, but the way it used to be was it would look at the comments on a given slide. Actually, the way it used to be was there were only comments on a given slide. There was no such thing as a generic comment on the slideshow. So what would happen would be that the page would load and it would show the comments from slide one. And then they would advance the slide, which would go and fetch the graphic resource from S3. That didn't affect us at all. And turned out it would go to our server and fetch the comments for slide two. And then we'd advance to slide three, go to the server, fetch the comments for slide three. We profiled the app one day. We're like, wow, like one third of the requests going through our system are fetching of comments. And it almost always returns the message, there's no comments. So that's kind of dumb. But it seemed like a good idea at the time. We were like, you know, we the data is for an individual slide, you know, so, you know, you do need it only in that context. And it seemed like a good idea. But, it, you know, once you actually look at how it behaves in production, you realize naive Ajax can really mess up your servers. So now I'm going to talk about the idea of prefetching and the idea that sometimes Ajax actually should just be JavaScript. Like, you should just have a page, and the page does stuff, but it's not going back to the servers at all. So a humble tab. So you're looking at the related slideshows. We really care about related slideshows. And then they click on more by user. We do a little nifty animations. Boom, more by user. So you can see I talk about Ajax and Flash a lot. This was really slow because it was going back to the server every time. And we did that because it was the really easy thing to do in Ruby. The Ruby has this sort of scripting paradigm called RJS, where you just write little snippets of Ruby code and it goes back to the server and it auto-generates the JavaScript and it's really pretty. But it's really dumb because what you're doing is that you're introducing unnecessary latency. You know, this is not information that we couldn't have in advance. You know, so why not just bake it into the page and then have the panel just show the information that's relevant? Now, of course, this is like kind of a trade-off, right? It's more complicated than just saying when you click on more by user, it should appear instantly. What kind of, anybody have any idea like what kind of parameters we care about when trying to figure out whether this should be preloaded or not? Like, what would you size? So the size of the HTML? That's a good one. That's a good one. Anybody else? Bingo. Right. So if nobody ever clicks on more by user, you probably don't want to make your page heavier, right? You want to say, okay, that's an edge case. And so if it's an edge case, then they're going to wait a second for it to load. How much it costs to actually do that fetch is another parameter that you care about. Like, if it's really, really expensive, then maybe you just, there's no CPU left in that, in making this page load in an acceptable amount of time, and you just have to fetch it during the next fetch. So, right, current page response time is another one, like me, you're just at the limit. So this is a trade-off, and I think you could probably, like someone who is better at arithmetic than me could probably come up with some kind of a formula that you use to actually make this decision. But I think you usually just have to profile your app and get it down to the point where it's preloaded. That's the sort of the simple, you know, without thinking about it too much approach that I've come to believe in. If you can avoid going back to the server, just bake it into the page and then make it really fast. Unless you can't afford to do that. Okay, this is something that we had not considered at all. Because we hadn't considered metrics at all. We're like, we're just building a site. We'll put it out there. See what people do. You see people do. You're like, well, so there's lots of people using the site. What are they actually doing? So then you install Google Analytics, right? It's free. It's like something that used to cost thousands of dollars. It's really well implemented. It's totally from a Web 1.0 world. It assumes that every, you know, pages are the coin of the realm, and that the URL tells you everything you need to know, and it measures your page views really well if you just drop that snippet in your footer. Turned out our metrics were completely, completely off. And it gave us the wrong impression of how people were behaving on our site. It messed up business meetings. It was just a bad, bad scene. You know, our bounce rate was 400% higher on Google Analytics than it actually was once we really started baking the analytics into our own application. And that's because all of this Ajax stuff doesn't actually get measured by Google Analytics. Google Analytics is just measuring the page load. So someone spends 10 minutes on your page doing stuff, and then they leave, it counts it as a bounce. And obviously for the same reason, time on site was way off, about 50% we found. So there's a fix for this. The fix for this is you do, well, fix for this is you do an integration where you, for all of your AJAX calls, you make a call back to Google Analytics and you tell them, it's like, it's a page. I loaded this page. I loaded the next slide page, right? That's cool. But now your page views numbers are totally bogus, right? And you have this nice chart that shows one day your page views increased 600%. So it's hard to explain to people. And, you know, you really would like to actually know your page view numbers because that's where you can show advertising and that's what, you know, the business model's about. So Google is working on the Google beta of the analytics actually accounts for this really well. They have events and events are separate from pages and you can make calls to events. Unfortunately, it maxes out at 100, which is bullshit. It's way, way, way too low. Like people easily do more than 100 actions in one session on our site. So we haven't switched over to it yet, but I'm sure they're Google and they'll remove the limit at some point, and that's when we're going to make the switch. Either that or in a year when they stop supporting the old Google Analytics. Still worth doing analytics, even though it's a pain in the butt. So Google Analytics has a way of measuring goals. So you can say, this is something I want to achieve. And in this particular case, this is the ratio of people looking at a slideshow and then clicking on related. Why do we care about that? We're trying to suck them into the site, right? It's like someone comes in through a Google query. What we want to say is, hey, this is what you were looking for. What about this other one? You know, check it out. Stay longer. Get comfortable. Unfortunately, it turned out our related algorithm was really, really stupid. It was, we were looking for a random slideshow that was tagged with a random tag with the same as the slideshow you were looking at. So basically the dumbest possible thing. And we were doing it real time. That was why it was dumb, because it had to be fast. So we pulled it into the back end. So we said, okay, let's calculate this in advance. And then let's do something smarter. And we did something smarter. And you can just see, you know, the bounce from like 4 to 7% in one day when we rolled out the code. So this, like, if you instrument your site properly, you can actually tell when you're doing something right. You have enough users so that these changes do show up. So it's worth doing, but it's a pain. Okay. Uploading processes are a great place to use Flash and AJAX. And there's several sort of interlocking themes in upload. One of them is this fishhook design pattern, which is what I mentioned before, like asking for forgiveness rather than permission. They've specified a file. Start uploading it. Let them cancel the upload if they want to. But just suck them into the site. Just let them engage with the lowest possible amount of work. The other thing is that this is actually Flash. But it doesn't look like Flash. It's not actually using any Flash on the UI. It's only using a library that's called Swift Upload. So what you see is that Flash is starting to become useful not for doing vector graphics and fancy branding stuff, but actually for the VM, for providing functionality that you can't get with JavaScript. And I think that invisible Flash, you know, paradigm is a pretty powerful one, pretty useful one. Oh, the third one. So just giving continual feedback on a long-term process. So upload could take a minute. It could take 5 minutes. It could take, you know, someone could be 56K modem, and it could be a 30-meg presentation, and we'd be there all week. So you want to at least let them know where they are. And I think that's generalizable. I can't think of other processes that take large amounts of time when the user is engaged, but anything like that, you want to tell them where they are. Oh, yeah, the one I told you that we screwed up, converting, right? So they upload the file. And they can see where they are in the upload process. And then we say, yeah, we got your file. We'll get back to you. Right? Wouldn't it be nice if they had another progress bar that said, you're fifth in the queue and this should take on average, you know, 3 minutes and it's counting down? You know, kind of the way, you know, when you call up, you know, your cell phone company and they put you on hold and they say, we are experiencing high call volume. Your call is important to us. Please stand by. We'll be responded to in approximately 7.2 minutes. So using external widgets to like get up and running, there's a lot of sort of Flash and AJAX type stuff that you can just get for free. You can embed into your own website and it will get you some pretty powerful functionality. Like Google search, that's not technically AJAX, right? But getting search working is a lot of effort. And just putting a Google custom search widget on your site and letting people find stuff is a huge, it's an hour of work and it's a huge, huge benefit to your users. And then 3 months later, you can install Lucene, do it the right way, and you're back and running. But this is like a, it's like a crutch. Until you can walk for yourself, Google custom search is a really nice option. Gigya Wildfire solves another really hard problem. You know, how do you inject your widgets into MySpace, Facebook, blah, 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 blah? I mean, there's like, now the widget has like 400 social networks, I think. Keeping up with all of those APIs and, you know, managing all those business relationships is not anything anybody wants to do. So Gigya does it. So this is where you have to be careful because they have their own business model, right? So they're trying to get Facebook installs on their app instead of me getting Facebook installs on my app. As long as I'm okay with that, as long as I understand how they're getting paid, I'm getting free functionality, and that's cool. Add this. This you could do for yourself. I, you know, coded a widget like this like 2 years ago. But, you know, they, again, they support more social bookmarking apps than you would probably do. They do a better job than you do. I don't actually understand what their business model is at all because there's no registration information they're collecting here. But, you know, if they want to do it, why should you bother? It's my motto. Okay. This is another classic blunder in the Ajax department. So when you're doing customer support, someone sends you a message. They say, I can't figure out how to change my email settings. I'm getting too many emails. You know, they're probably a little bit angry. They're probably, they might not be the most patient person. Since they couldn't figure it out, you could hypothesize there's maybe some selection bias there in terms of intelligence. And if you have to say to them, okay, you go to this page, and then you go halfway down, and then you click on the link that says email notifications, then it'll open up in the same page right underneath, and then you'll click on this checkbox to do something. That's like a paragraph with all kinds of potentials for miscommunication. You have to send that paragraph again and again. If you just can send them a URL, you say, go to the, you know, slash edit, you know, slash my form thing, and then there's the checkbox, and you uncheck it. Much, much smoother. It'll be just much easier. So even though this slick Ajax stuff is cool, you want to have forms available. It's almost like a fallback option. You want to have a place where people can go, a URL you can send to them, that they'll be able to go and say, okay, I unchecked this, I checked this, I typed in what my profile is. And some stuff that we're initially kind of embarrassed by, like the slideshow edit page, it's just a big kind of ugly form. We're actually realized now is actually that's kind of good just because it has this property. So everything doesn't have to be all slick. And good form design still matters. We're not very good at it, but that's a separate issue. Okay, SEO. So everybody knows that the SEO story with Flash is a problem. The SEO story with JavaScript is also a problem. Now, if you're just using it for providing these little extra widgets and functionality, that's fine. If content is being post-fetched, like in the, remember the comment example that I talked about? Google didn't know about any of the comments on our system, which is a real problem because, you know, people will put information in there that will actually really let you know whether it's a page that you should go to or not. Like there's user names and things like that. The slideshows themselves, the Flash, initially wasn't being indexed by Google at all. And there's stuff that you can do that can make the Flash, you know, SEO readable. And we've done all that work, but it wasn't easy. So anything that you want Google to know about, you should just bake into the initial page. Don't post-fetch it. Don't put it into an Ajax thing. Don't put it into a Flash thing. Just bake it into the page. Oh, another blunder that we made was we put everything on S3, including our Swifts for our own application. What that meant was that Compete and Alexa weren't measuring that traffic at all. They were just counting that as S3's traffic. You want to get credit for your traffic. So hosting your actual code, like your Swift files that are the main widget logic on your own servers is a really good idea. The content, that stuff can go on S3. Who cares about that? This is another classic blunder. So don't just save the data. So if you have an Ajax interaction where you like, this is someone adding themselves to a group. And initially what we did was we just We had a nice interaction where the thing would happen. They would add themselves to the group. It would close. And the page was the same as before. And it had worked fine. They had added themselves successfully to the group. If they hit refresh, they would have seen themselves on the group. But they felt like it was broken. And it was broken. And that means that after the page, the data gets committed, you have to go and you know, edit the DOM so that it puts them as the latest member there. So that they can get that feeling, okay, I added myself successfully. And look, there I am. Other people know about me. It's easy to let that slip. I mean, I think there's nobody who thinks that that isn't a bug, but it's important. It's an important bug to fix immediately. Working on size of your media files is important. Originally, our Flash files were really heavy, and that made the site really slow and hard to use. We've done a lot of work on compression, on optimization, on tweaking with so that we reduce file size while maintaining equivalent quality. And that makes a big difference on how long people stay on the site. So if there's something like that in your app, then pay attention to it. So animation. This is something that used to be more of an issue than it was. People used to do like really intrusive, you know, brand-oriented animations and things like that. I think there's less of a temptation to do that now. The aesthetic has changed. But still, you know, whatever you're thinking of doing, just make the color twice as faint and see what happens. Make the animation do half as much and see what happens. Just make it subtle. Make it look really, just draw the user's attention barely. That's more effective. Where this really affected us, I mean, I think we're pretty good at not doing anything too awful in terms of like, boom, 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 sites doing all this crazy stuff. But PowerPoint itself is kind of one of those things, right? That's what people use PowerPoint for. It's kind of like Flash in, 2000. People use PowerPoint to go, boom, 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 boom. Here come my bullet points. We don't support that. And that was originally a bug, and that's turned into a feature. We just didn't support it because we didn't know how, and it seemed like a lot of work. And people complained about it. And then new users would complain about it, and old users would say, hey, it makes, it really lets you focus on the content. It keeps it really clean, keeps it really consistent. We think of it as being kind of like the way YouTube standardized the delivery of video with something that everybody agreed was awful, right? The resolution is terrible, but it's always fast and it's always the same. We think of an analog there. Well, we want to keep it so that you always know when you click next slide exactly what's going to happen next. The next slide's going to load, period. Oh, that's a good question. So we need the fonts and we need the vector graphics. So we absolutely need Flash. It's totally core to the widget, but it's in a lot of places around the widget it's not needed. And there's some places like the upload where it's needed, but it's not visible. So it's being used by an API. No, too heavy, not good enough quality. We did try it. Keeping them in the zone, like just making sure that your users stay engaged by suggesting the next thing that they can do rather than going to another site. This we just released last week. We're pretty happy with it. It's the typical YouTube type of thing where you suggest the next thing that they could click on, and it's right there. So, Flash full screening. Is it okay or not? Discuss. Is this guy back here is shaking his head? What do you think? You don't think so? Why not? Is it never okay? Hmm. Okay. Any you think full screen video is great? Okay. So why do you think full screen video is great? Okay. So differing opinions. This is healthy. Give and get. Okay. I don't quite get what I'd get back later. Ah, okay, got it. Yeah, we use full screening actually, and we're just copying YouTube. But I think that if someone's opting in, the way I think about it is if they're opting in, if they're saying, I want to look at this now, like they do with the video, then it's okay. If like they went to a URL and all of a sudden it full screened on them, that's obviously horrible user experience. It's very interruptive. It's not meeting their expectations. This is, by the way, like I was last year, I was talking about how you have to keep Flash on a leash. That was one of the things I was talking about at South by Southwest last year. So like I've kind of mellowed. And I think that Flash can be full screened. As long as someone's opting in, it's okay. Multimedia editing. This is one of the things that Flash is amazing for, right? Because you can do all this cool stuff. I mean, look at the vector graphics that we have for the sound wave on the bottom and the fact that we can play back audio and that all this drag and drop stuff that zooms you into a particular area of the data is really easy to code. You know, anything like this where someone's working on their media, editing their media, producing their media, Flash is really, really good for. We've had good experience with it. And again, this is not a full, it's not like hiding the navigation, but it's a full screen Flash app. I mean, you know, it takes up the entire web page with the exception of the top nav. And I think that's okay. I usually try to keep Flash like inside these little widgets, but if someone's working for half an hour, you want them to have the tools they need. And that's how long it would take to do a really good synchronization of an audio file to a slideshow, which is what's happening here. Multimedia production. So this is another thing you can't do with JavaScript, right? You need access to the microphone. You need access to the camera. Who are you going to call? Flash. Amazing. Like now there's like 8 different video startups, video chat startups. Voxbox is the one that I've like seen and played around with, but they have 7 competitors, all like running around begging people to like, you know, integrate with them. This is really cool. That, you know, you can just get person-to-person video chat without anything installed at all on the computer. That's amazing. Invisible Flash. This is what I was talking about earlier. So Flash has some unique capabilities. There's the microphone. There's the fact that you can save unlimited amounts of data on the user's hard drive if you get permission from them. There's the fact that it has sockets. And there's the fact that it, in as of Flash 8, you can keep track of how much of a file has been uploaded to the server on the client side, which is that's what we use for the Swift upload thing. So you can use all these things, and you can just talk to Flash and have your interface just be all HTML looking. You're not having any problems with people like not thinking Flash is appropriate on the page, they're not violating their expectations, but you're being able to get all of the benefits. Dojo has an API, I think it's called dojo.storage or storage.dojo, something like that. Basically, it's a JavaScript interface for writing to Flash shared local objects, which are where you can save big amounts of data. So that's a great example of invisible Flash for JavaScript developers. Keeping Flash inside these little nuggets, I think, is kind of a best practice. You know, like the slideshows. You know, they're usually small, like 2 inches by 3 inches. They're wrapped around HTML. Okay. The stuff people complain about that I don't think is a big deal. So sort of 2 months after people started talking about Ajax, people started talking about all the problems that happened with Ajax. And some of them were totally legitimate. Some of them weren't. And so I guess this debate continues to rage in the backwaters of the internet. The back button. I don't really care. Maybe that's, you know, maybe I'm wrong here. But I mean, I think that if your page design is good, if you've chunked up your pages and your information architecture effectively, then yeah, they went to the page. They did stuff on the page. And when they go back, they went back to the previous page they were on. And I think that's perfectly fine. I don't think, and I'm not going to spend, you know, 4 months, you know, writing an undo, like, cache so that every time they hit the back button, it undoes the last JavaScript action. I mean, I have more important things to do with my time. Inventing new UI conventions. Why not? I mean, there's new tools. There's new capabilities. We weren't able to do all this stuff before. Somebody has to figure out how to do stuff like, you know, if you're going to add a slideshow to a group within the page without going somewhere else. You know, I didn't have a roadmap when I was thinking about that problem. I had to make up something new. People are pretty good at learning how to do new stuff. They're smart. Leaving offline people behind. It's a freaking web application, right? How is this a critique of anything other than the web itself? there's cool stuff coming up that solves this problem, like Google Gears. But I mean, don't listen to people who complain about this. Okay. I think that I'm almost out of time. Is that correct? What am I doing for time? 5. Okay, cool. Cool Flash stuff that we have not found a use yet. Sockets. There's Flash lets you have sockets. That means that you can do server-side push. You can send a message to a web application. That's totally freaking huge, right? Like, you just think about like collaboration applications, like meetings, right? That you can build. Unfortunately, it works on the wrong port, so it probably be blocked by your firewall. And there's also really cool stuff that you can do without using this. So there's good libraries for doing Comet, which is basically using all kinds of grungy, grody HTTP hacks. But as long as someone else has to do the hacks, why do I care? It's packaged up in a library and a server that I can just install and use. I'm happy. Local data objects, I talked about those. We don't use them. They seem, if you want to cache a lot of data on the user's hard drive, could be cool. Flex. Flex is so pretty. The programming model of just having declarative XML being the way that you lay out your screens is great. But I need to make a web page, so it doesn't solve my problem. I need to make HTML and have chunks of Flash inside it. So unless I'm going to have chunks of Flash inside my HTML that also have lots of complicated layout, then all of that Flash declarative XML layout stuff doesn't really help me that much. And the last time I looked into it, it was kind of a heavy download. So cool Ajax stuff. So I thought Ajax was all about the widgets and the components when I first came to it, but I still haven't done a data grid application. It's been like 3 years, so I'm still waiting. But there are cool data grids out there, and there's a lot of times that you're building a regular app and you need something that's kind of spreadsheety-like, so seems like it should be useful. Haven't used it yet. Offline data storage, Google Gears, same thing. Okay. It's just some quick recipes to leave you with. The microlink. This is when you click on it and it expands in place, used ubiquitously. The 1 second mutation. That's where the component kind of slides out. Very nice. The pop-up. This is where you go over the top and you actually overlay on top of where the user is currently viewing. So it's in the Z-axis. The 1 second spotlight, aka the yellow fade. Everybody's favorite, really easy to code. Malleable content. This is like when you can, your content is in read-only form, and then you click on it, it opens up a widget for editing it, and then you click on it and it saves it back to read-only form. The nice thing about this is there's less forms in the page, so the user has less choices, so there's less clutter. Temporary messages. So, you send a message and using that grody message sending thing I showed you earlier, and it says message sent. And what happens after that is that it just fades away and disappears. Again, some usability problems there because if the person looked away, they didn't see the message. But it's pretty. That's what I care about. Tabs, no explanation needed. And that's about all I got. So, anybody have any questions? That question is the reason that I built SlideShare. And yes, it is. It will be available in 1 hour. I was actually having trouble with my network connection in the hotel, so I couldn't upload it right before I got here. But it will be available within 1 hour at slideshare.net/jboutelle. Boutelle. None. Fuck them. Okay. So if that was through JSON, how is that less secure than if it's going through HTML? If it's being sent in the clear, it's being sent in the clear. If it's encrypted, it's encrypted, right? Right. Yeah, I mean, sending information in the clear is bad. Like, frankly, I haven't done a lot of thinking about the security implications of JavaScript. We don't have any critical user data, so we're less worried about that. But we obviously want to look out for exploits. So that's a good point. For JavaScript or for Flash? Okay, so I'm really depressed because Steve Jobs just like took a crap all over Flash. You know, he said Flash Lite is not good enough and Flash is too heavy, so you're never, ever, ever going to get Flash for the iPhone. Me sad. In terms of JavaScript support for phones, I have no idea. Yeah, and actually, that's what we've been thinking of for mobile. When we do a mobile thing, is we'll just use images. So, good suggestion. For the PowerPoint, we don't talk about that. Sorry? How do I deal with fonts in Flash? Oh, okay. So we actually embed them into the Flash file, into the Swift file that is sent out. Anyone else? So the stage one of the business model is ads, and we haven't done a very good job of monetizing that yet. We just have Google AdSense, but it's better than it should be, just because A, the content tends to be kind of businessy, and B, we bake the transcripts into the page, so Google has a pretty good idea of what the content is. So the ads are pretty relevant. So stage one is ads, and stage two and three we don't talk about. Anyone else? Yep, here we go. No, we're like, you know, we're like five or six guys, so we aren't that organized about it. We, you know, we try to kind of make up like names, like the fish hook. You know, like everybody uses the word the fish hook within the company now. I like to talk about that approach, but nothing formal at all. I think the stuff that Yahoo is doing, you know, that Bill Scott was running for a while, is really, really cool, and I wish I had more time to read it. Yes. Yes, absolutely. First of all, XML is really heavy. And second, the last time that I tried to parse XML on the client side, I ended up, you know, having to get special JavaScript libraries for it, and it was a big pain in the butt. So I would definitely think that JSON is the better way to go rather than XML. Oh, for Flash. Yeah, for Flash, yeah, you have to do XML, and XML is easy. It's a good question, actually. I'm sure you can read JSON from Flash because ActionScript is just JavaScript. But I've never tried to do it. We've always just used XML. Okay. ActionScript libraries. Cool. I did not know that. So we're like eight people now. And it took us 4 or 5 months before we launched. We were working on another product. So we kind of had a company together, and then I kind of got this idea. And so I wrote a prototype, and then I got one guy working on it, and then we, you know, just kind of all got really excited about it and started working on it. So that was how it went. I have not heard of it, but I'm going to Google it right after this. So you're saying it's basically like it's a terse but semi-readable data format that's much better than XML? Oh, it's binary format. Okay. Okay. So that, yeah, maybe that's the data format that all of this sort of flash server-side stuff that Adobe's always trying to sell you is using to send data back and forth. Okay. Yeah, I've never been at all interested in the server-side Adobe products, so I'd never looked into it, but it's probably a pretty efficient format. So there was a question back here or no? Okay, time. Thank you, everybody.